shine so green.
And welcome to another Behind the Panels one-shot special. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh.
In this one-shot special, we speak to DC Comics artist Nicola Scott. Nicola's based in Sydney. She's perhaps best known for her work on Birds of Prey, Secret Six, Wonder Woman, and currently on Earth 2 with James Robinson. We speak to her about that series. We speak to her about her upcoming work. We speak to her about her convention work and how she got into the industry. We hope you enjoy the interview. One little caveat, we do warn you that there was a little bit of an issue with Skype, and you'll hear a slight beeping in the background. That's completely normal.
And out of our control.
And out of our control. But despite that, it's a wonderful interview, and we hope you really enjoy it. Nicola Scott, thank you so much for joining us on Behind the Panels. You've
Thanks for having me.
You've worked in the DC Universe for a number of years now. How much, but this is the first time with Earth 2 that you've had sort of freedom to design a new universe in a lot of ways. So how much freedom did you have in redesigning or designing for the first time some of those characters?
Well, because there was so much to do and Earth 2 had been developing for about 6 months before I started on the book, I was booked onto it by Dan DiDio right at the beginning, but it was about 6 months before I started. And in that time, the plot for the story had evolved considerably, and a number of sort of designs were being contributed by the guys that were doing a lot of the designs for all the new 52, like Joe Prado and Jim Lee and Cully Hanna. And so by the time I got on, there was sort of quite a lot of stuff in play that I got to then sort of contribute my ideas to. And it was quite a collaborative experience, which is actually my favorite. I come from a theater background. And I kind of really liked the ability to sort of, you know, play with other people's great ideas, but also, you know, throw in some radical ones of my own. And the result of which was sort of really diverse, you know. When you look at the final designs for all of the characters, some of them are very much my design, some of them are very much Jim Lee's design, some of them are very much Joe Prado's designs. And once we sort of got it into the book, we had Brett Booth doing some designs as well. And again, it was just this sort of really lovely collaborative experience. And I was really grateful for all that help, because there was so much work to do. There's so much work to do when you're world building from scratch and you don't have a whole lot of other books happening in your same universe. You're going to have to do all the work yourself. So anytime anyone was throwing in some ideas, I was really grateful.
Did you ever find yourself going, man, I wish I had characters like Batman and Superman to work with, or were you really happy with the characters you had?
Well, we did have Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in the first issue, and then he killed them.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I actually found that quite liberating. You know, it was like, here are the big hitters, and now they're gone. So what's left? I found that sort of, it was liberating sort of visual storytelling, but it was also, I think, liberating for James in that, you know, we were dealing with people from the ground up rather than well established. And it was from the ground up in the aftermath of these incredible iconic superheroes that were sort of, you know, taking care of the world. And here were these little guys that were going to sort of try and fill their shoes. So it makes for sort of interesting storytelling.
Hmm. You spoke a little bit there about the collaborative process on it, and one of the very highly publicized things that's happened in the last few months is James Robinson leaving the title.
Bummer, right?
Yeah, are you planning to stay on with the book after that?
Yeah. I'll stay on. I'm sort of about to start on James's last issue.
Right.
I'm just finishing off his second last. I'm about to start on his last issue, and then after that I'll go straight on to the new writer's stuff. And while I haven't read any of the scripts, I've talked with the writer about not the direction that they want to go, but kind of the direction that DC has plotted for the book. And and the new writer's ideas within that. And it's interesting. It's going to be a sort of slight detour from where the book has been going, but only slight. One of the great things about Earth 2 is that we've been building very slowly, just sort of lacing in little details about the state that Earth 2 is in. That it's not actually the same. It's not actually a direct parallel to the primary DC universe. It's considerably more corrupted. And we've sort of been slowly but surely getting to a point where we're revealing just exactly what the status is. And it's right at that point when James is leaving, which is a shame because this is what we've been building towards. But the nice thing is that the new writer gets to take that sort of that revelation and sort of twist it in an interesting way.
Yeah, I mean, the way you talk about the process too, it sounds very much like it's just following on from what you said before about the collaborative aspects of it. How much of your, how many of your ideas kind of ultimately make it in? Do you influence story at all? We've spoken to writers before who have said that artists have looked at things in a certain way and then they've thought, oh, didn't think of that, and took it off in a different direction.
Well, yeah, look, that's absolutely... comics is one of the most collaborative experiences where you kind of have to suck up what the next person is doing. You know, when you're working on a film or a TV show or something like that, everyone is working towards the finished product simultaneously. Mm. Where with comics, the writer does their thing and they've written their story and then the artist takes it and does their version of the story, and then the inker sort of does their version of the line work, and the colorist interpret, and it's all just sort of interpreting what you have in front of you. And so, you know, sort of lots of things can get lost in along the way. It's kind of like Chinese whispers, but also things can be sort of found in there. You know, I'm big on subtext. I love finding subtext in things, and while it's not always appropriate, so, you know, I try not to highlight it, sometimes it is, and I love sort of, you know, bringing some of that stuff to the surface. We also have, as an artist, a significant sort of input on how characters are portrayed. You can really sort of turn the tone of how someone is talking or responding to an issue with how you choose to draw them. You know, you can celebrate them or you can put them down. And it can change the tone of the dialogue that's coming out of their mouth. And so, you know, in that respect, one of the examples that I use for that, one of my personal examples, was when I was working on Teen Titans. At the time, Wonder Girl had been the team leader, and she had been for a while, and everybody had kind of not really liked her as the team leader. Like, she was doing a shit job. And I found that really disappointing because I thought she was a great character and I thought she was doing pretty well. It was just she came across as whiny. And in the first issue that I got to draw, she was having a fight with Superboy. They were kind of breaking up. And I just thought, oh, I see it now. They're drawing her like she's... All the artists that have been drawing her previously are sort of drawing her like she's whining about her situation rather than bearing the load of the weight of her situation. And so I asked the writer and the editor if they didn't mind if I drew the scene in a particular way that was just a little more subtle and complex and a little more sympathetic to what she was trying to say. And they were like, yeah, sure, absolutely. And it did. It changed the whole tone of the fight so that it seemed more like this sort of mutual sadness rather than her being a bitch.
Well, it makes complete sense. It's the same concept behind putting a smiley on a statement in a text message. I mean, you can change the entire tone with a picture.
Absolutely.
The one of the other bits of work that you've done recently, in the new 52 at least, is a couple of issues of Superman as well, with the bit of a legend there, George Perez as well.
I know, how exciting.
Apart from working with someone that huge, you're also working with arguably the biggest character in the history of comics.
Soon
to get another rebooted film. Is it intimidating coming to a character like that? You know, when you say so much of what you do is depicting how a character is seen to the world, drawing someone like Superman on one of the flagship titles, is that an intimidating process?
It is generally with Superman because he's this sort of, he's the top of the food chain, really, in terms of, you know, cape superheroes. And because he doesn't have a mask or, you know, sort of visual symbols to hide behind. Like, you know, with Batman, you've got the mask and you've got the cape and you've got sort of, you can have many visual interpretations of him and it will always look like Batman. Where with Superman, it's just his face. You know, he's still got a cape and he's still got a big etched shield and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to drawing his face, there's kind of nothing to hide behind and everybody has their own idea of what Superman should look like. And so you, as an artist, you kind of need to find your way of drawing this archetype, generic superhero face and still make it interesting without it, but it's still looking like Superman. Superman's one of the hardest characters to find your voice on, I think, your visual voice on. So that in itself has been intimidating any time I've got to draw him, but working on the New 52, that kind of was, because I wasn't the lead artist, I ended up drawing half the first arc. You know, I drew three of the first six issues. But because I wasn't the lead artist, I wasn't kind of really involved in any of the development. I was just kind of thrust in with a script. And so I that kind of situation, you feel really behind the eight ball and all you have to do is just keep up. And that's not my preferred way of working. You know, I like to be sort of really deeply immersed in what's going on, and so I know what sort of little bits to highlight and sort of play up. So it was kind of really intimidating, but at the same time, it was really satisfying to get to work with George, who I've met a couple of times, but I don't really know that well. But just sort of getting to work with him, getting to work on Superman, and getting to work on Superman in the New 52 when everything is getting a lot of attention, that was quite a lot of fun.
With the New 52, actually, you've mentioned it a few times, and we're now 2 years into the New 52, so we like to call it the newish 52 here on the show. You've worked on both sides of Flashpoint. You've worked significantly on the other side of Flashpoint with people like Gail Simone, quite significantly on one of my favorite runs of Birds of Prey and so forth, and Secret Six, of course. Ooh. You know, one of my favorite set of characters. But when you come to something like the New 52, when some of those characters are then going to fundamentally change, thinking particularly someone like Barbara Gordon, what were your first reactions to kind of to that massive line-wide change?
Oh, look, it's one of those things where some of the changes make complete sense. Some of them are sort of like, oh, well, I can see why they're doing it. Like with Barbara Gordon, it was a case of, oh, I can understand why they're doing it, but the trick is going to be in the execution, not in the decision. You know, the decision was simply because in all other media, every time you see Batgirl, it's Barbara Gordon. Anytime you see a cartoon, anytime you see the TV show, anytime you see any other version of Batgirl outside of comics, it's always Barbara Gordon. So I can understand why it makes sense to them to make this sort of 20-year retcon. But it really comes down to how they do it, with how much taste and dignity they do it. And that was kind of how Gail was telling me about it. You know, as soon as she found out, she called me to say, we should do this book together. And I was like, wow, that's going to be really sort of tricky. But yeah, absolutely. You know, if anyone's going to do it right, it's going to be you and me. And for whatever reason, DC wouldn't let us do it. They wouldn't let us work on it together. They wanted to split us up. So I was kind of bummed about that because, you know, Barbara Gordon's one of my favorite characters. Barbara Gordon as Batgirl is absolutely my Batgirl.
Mine too.
So I was kind of, I was bummed that I didn't get a chance to work on that. But, you know, what can you do? On to the next thing.
I just very on a, like a little side note. I was looking at one of your Superman issues from the New 52, which actually had a guest starring spot from Kara from Supergirl. And the thought occurred to me when I was looking at it that she's a much more mature looking Kara, and there's a lot more detail involved in her. And I was just wondering, do you have a preference when you're drawing whether you're drawing male or female characters, because your female characters have such depth to them?
Do I have a preference for drawing female or male characters?
Yeah.
Is that the question?
Yeah.
Look, in all honesty, I just like the variety. I like as much variety as possible. That's why drawing Secret Six was such a hoot, because there was absolute variety. You know, drawing the same body types over and over, like, you know, having a standard male superhero body type and a standard female superhero body type over and over and over again is really boring. So to me, I like to shake it up. And I'm not a huge fan of the new Supergirl outfit. I find it sort of really contradictory to the fact that she's a teenage girl.
I'm kind of there with you.
You know, I'm not crazy about it at all. But, you know, I try to make her look like a older but teenage still girl, you know, sort of maybe 18 as opposed to 16. And I, you know, I feel like maybe there is a little more depth, or the perception of a little more depth to my female characters, because a lot of female characters are usually drawn quite two-dimensionally. I think, you know, just maybe being a girl, I just can see a little more subtlety in the female spectrum.
Yeah, well, it shows.
And I like to sort of, you know, bring that to the surface. I don't think that Wonder Woman and Supergirl and Catwoman all have the same body type or the same body language.
Agreed.
Just on that, we actually had Kelly Sue DeConnick on here a few weeks ago, and we were talking about female roles of women in the comics industry, and she's been quite vocal about that over the years, and we're talking about the representation of women creators in the industry.
Yeah.
Do you think there's still a lot of hurdles there, or is it becoming more focused on putting good creators with good with good properties?
Look, it's a little tricky for me to knowingly comment on this question, just because I'm not in the States where the industry is happening. You know, like I can only really speak to my own experience, which is really quite limited when it comes to how the industry operates. When you look at the greater industry, the small press, the indie press and such, there are actually a lot of female creators.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many female creators, writers and artists. It's really just when it comes down to the superhero books that the ratio really splits. And I don't know... I don't quite know what it is that separates them. I don't know if it's the people running the company that are not hiring that many women. I don't know if it's there just aren't that many women who are that interested in drawing superhero books. I don't know if there are that many women who can keep up with a monthly schedule. You know, it could be a combination of all of the above. I have no sort of idea of exactly what that dynamic is. You know, the more women in the industry, I think the more potential for varied storytelling and art styles there is. You know, it's the better for the industry.
Mm-hmm. You spoke about your distance from the actual US industry. Does that make things difficult, or have you found that sort of gives you a completely different perspective on it?
Well, a bit of both. It's like, for me, deciding to get into comics to having a monthly book at DC took me 4.5 years, which isn't really very long. And considering I did most of that from the other side of the world, it's really not very long at all. But so, you know, I can't say that distance has hurt my career, because I've been working full-time for a good year before I started at DC, and, you know, I've been at DC ever since. So it hasn't really hurt in that respect, but I am out of the loop. I go over to the States usually once a year, sometimes twice a year, for a convention, and I spend most of my time, my social time, sort of out to dinner or out to drinks with, you know, whoever in the industry I can hang out with, and I just listen to them talk about the industry so that I get an idea of what's going on. You know, even if, particularly like friends that I know well and they have their own sort of biased perspectives, when I hear, you know, three or four of them sort of discussing or arguing over a point, knowing what they're like, I can kind of, and the points that they're making, I can kind of work out where the truth might be in the middle somewhere. And so, you know, that to me is invaluable, because I really just don't know what's going on. Most creators that live in the States are doing, you know, half a dozen to a dozen conventions a year. And that just sort of incidental contact with each other keeps everyone in the loop. And a lot of work is generated at these conventions. Almost every job I've had has happened while I've been at a convention at San Diego, and someone said, oh, you know, this is coming up, do you want to work on it with me? Or I've heard that something's coming up and I've asked for it, and they've said sure, or whatever. So that sort of, that incidental FaceTime is absolutely invaluable. And so I make the most of it when it's in front of me, but I have a fraction of it in front of me than most creators do.
Do you think, in a way, that the distance between you and the industry might keep the politics of business out of it and keep the creativity pure?
And well, it certainly contributes to that. You know, there's been a number of times when, you know, shit's going down, either at the DC office or amongst certain creators or whatever, and I just think, oh, thank God I'm not there, because, you know, I just don't have to deal with it. Or I can play completely dumb, you know, when they contact me about it, I can just say, I have no idea what you're talking about. but at the same time, that ignorance isn't really that helpful in terms of being able to steer my career. I feel like my career options are limited because I'm so far away. You know, if I was in the States, and I was a native, I could sort of stay there and move around, I feel like some of my options might be opened up a little bit because I'd have more access. But certainly when the drama happens, it really depends on the drama. I'm not very into politics. I like to just sort of let the people who are natural arguers have their way and just deal with the aftermath. But every now and then, I do feel like I need to kick in and say something. And I think because it's only every now and then, people listen. You know, they're not just sort of, oh, God, here she goes again, because I'm rabbiting on about something. You know, on the odd occasion when I do get a beam up on it about something, they tend to listen.
Cool.
Nicola, we know your time's short this morning. Thank you so much for chatting with us here on Behind the Panels.
Thank you, fellas.
We know you're appearing at Supernova here in Sydney, and coming
That's
up
fine.
At Oz Comic Con in July. We'll be at one or both of those, so hopefully we'll be able to catch up with you then.
Fantastic.
And so thank you so much for your time, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was fantastic, and it was great. We only had limited time with Nicola this morning, so it was a little bit of a shorter special than we normally do, but got some wonderful news in there about
We have to
that.
Make an admission of ours to get her into the studio and have a proper chat.
Absolutely. Yep. We'll send a link to this, and I'll send her a message afterwards. Just to see if we can get her over here, because I think it'd be great to have more people who are Australian comic artists who have made it as big as Nicola on the world scene. Because in many respects, she's made it in the way that
She's drawn Superman.
She's drawn Superman with George Perez, that yes. we spoke about. So once again, thank you to Nicola Scott for that. Also, thank you to the good folks at Oz Comic Con for arranging the interview for us. Oz Comic Con will be, Nicola will be at Oz Comic Con in Melbourne on the 6th and 7th of July. You can find more information about that at ozcomiccon.com. She'll also appear at Supernova later this month in June. Once again, supernova.com for any information about that. And for us, of course, hit us up at behindthepanels.net or on facebook.com/behindthepanels. We hope to hear from you soon. Will gasoline